This program was originally broadcast to home listeners of the BBC.
Take it from here, don't go away when you can take it from here. Why don't you stay and maybe join the fun now, the show has begun.
Everyone is in a flap and almost anything can happen.
Yes, with Joy Nichols, Dick Bentley, and Professor Jimmy Edwards together again, almost anything can happen, and presumably will. Moreover, we've found Wallace Eaton, Alan Dean, and the Keynotes among those present, and Frank Cantell has brought the augmented review orchestra along, so if you've got half an hour that's more or less clear,
take it from here.
Bentley, Bentley, come here. I have a wonderful idea. Have you ever heard of Battling Barbara?
You mean the girl boxer?
Yes.
The one who travels around the country giving exhibitions?
That's right, yes.
The one Peter Wilson wrote an article about?
Yes, that's right, yes.
No, never heard of her.
Well, I'll tell you. Battling Barbara is a girl boxer who travels around the country giving exhibitions. And Peter Wilson wrote an article about her.
Gosh, that's news to me. I don't know how you get to hear of these things.
Never mind that. The point is, there's money in these girl boxers. I suggest we put Joy into the ring.
Oh, Jimmy, that's ridiculous. You might as well suggest putting me into the ring.
Yes, I thought of that. But Joy can punch harder.
Well, I still say I look better in a gum field. I don't like the idea, Jimmy.
Oh, nonsense. Boxing has become very popular among members of the opposite, if the BBC will pardon the word, sex.
I still think that female boxing is crude, unfunny, and in the worst possible taste.
Bentley, where on earth did you pick up that expression?
I overheard somebody discussing last week's show.
Well, I've already picked out a fighting name for Joy. Now, let's put it to her. Oh, Joy, what's your opinion of the pseudonym Knuckles Nichols?
What a ghastly name! No, I told you before, Jimmy, I've no intention of boxing.
Joy, I don't want you to be awkward about this project. It'll help publicize the show. Think of it. A fragile little figure with laughing eyes bobbing among the rough he-men. You won't object, will you?
No, I don't mind what Dick does on his day off.
It's not me, it's you. What do you say, champ? After all, you've got a very effective straight left.
How do you know that?
Well, I...
Black Mark, Bentley!
Oh, this is silly. I've never even been near a boxing match. I don't even know the correct way to hold the referee.
That will come with experience. Let's test out your punch now. Now, don't be afraid of hurting. I'll flex my stomach muscles very rigidly like this. You see?
Yes.
It presents a solid wall of muscle. Are you ready?
Yes.
Well, now hit Bentley.
Oh, Dick. Dick, I'm sorry. Dick, get up. Oh, Dick, I didn't mean to hurt you. Dick, say something.
It was a great fight, Ma. But I don't... Where am I? Oh, Joy, you pack a wallop. My head's ringing.
Well, answer it. Honestly, Bentley, you are a weakling.
Well, I didn't have my nose flexed.
Oh, no, it was my fault. I'll never make a boxer. Jimmy, you'd better take back these boxing gloves. And, Dick, you'd better take back these shorts I borrowed from you.
Okay, then, Joy.
And by the way, Dick, don't be embarrassed about the frilly lacing round the edge. I'll sew it back on for you.
I still think I could have made you a champion, Joy. My runner, Wallace Eaton, will tell you what a good trainer I am. Oh, whoa. Didn't I put up the first local gymnasium?
Oh, yes, and it's lasted very well. We're very proud of our gym back in the building.
You lived quite near Jimmy, didn't you, Wallace?
Oh, yes. When we first knew the Edwardses, they lived just along the road.
Which house?
Oh, no house, just along the road. Finally, they got in the buildings, and little Jim had his own bedroom with a fitted carpet.
Oh, sounds very luxurious.
Yes, it was fitted over the broken window. Still, as Jim's ma's always said, where there's no sense, there's no feeling. Here, Jim, know who your mum got a letter from? This'll come as a pleasant surprise. Ellaline Letterhorn.
What a ghastly gnome. Don't remind me of her. She's gone and forgotten.
That's right. She's gone and forgotten your address. I told her to write care of the BBC. She was asking for a tender souvenir.
Well, did they do anything?
Yes, they played it this morning on Housewife's Choice.
Bentley, I do admire that new suit of yours.
Well, thank you, Jimmy. I chose the material very carefully. It matches my skin.
Oh, yes, Dick. Corduroy, isn't it? But Dick's an example to you, Jimmy. Look at that patch in your trousers. Now, why do you put a pink patch on a brown suit?
Joy, that isn't a patch. That's me.
Oh.
I can't afford to keep buying new suits.
Well, my tailor will fix you up. Only this morning he sent me a beautiful dark blue lounge suit and an old hammer.
Why the hammer?
Wait for this. I wanted something for knocking about the house.
They offered me that line, but I stood firm. Well, now that the subject of fashion is firmly planted in our minds, let's press on with the facts.
Wacko, Jimmy. Ladies and gentlemen, facts on fashion.
Once again, Type's Mac Observer has been digging up facts. And here are the statistics that he gathered in the field of fashion.
When asked whether long skirts suited everybody,
48% said no, only women.
4% said nothing at all.
63% said they like to see their wives slip into something cool.
82% suggested the River Thames.
1% was buying himself some underwear and said,
"Don't bother me, son. I'm trying to get myself some decent long pants." Here, miss, do you carry anything my size?
On the subject of new hairdos,
47% said their hair used to hang in a pageboy.
35% said it now hangs in a bathroom.
4% said nothing at all.
56% said they like a finger wave.
72% said they felt silly walking around with curly fingers.
1% said,
"Stop bothering me, son. No, miss, these are all too fancy for me. I must have long woolen or I catch cold round the middle of the month."
When asked what women would be wearing next spring,
77% said more woolen material.
65% said more printed crepe.
4% said nothing at all.
1% said,
"Now, I can't find anything to suit me here, miss.
I think I'd better go back to the men's department.
As regards fashion accessories, the subject of perfume is not to be sniffed at. Girls have realized that great care must be taken to get the right perfume for the right look.
I want something that'll make me dangerously alluring with the promise of forbidden delights about 1 and 3.
Certainly, miss. Can I interest you in my sin?
Well, I really came in for some perfume. We've got a flannel dance on Wednesday. I want something haunting and mysterious that goes well with green organdy.
Well, this is a very popular blend. Surrender.
Well, how long does it take to act? Well, the dance goes on till 12 and I don't want to fire off all me big guns before intermission. Well, what's the red one in the novelty-shaped bottle?
That's the ink for the cash book.
Oh.
Here's a gay thought. Why not blend your perfume with the personality of your escort? Is he the one wild moment type?
No, he's the keep at it all evening type. He's like John Garfield, and he's not such a misery, especially when...
Quite. Well, if you don't fancy Tropic Sands, Midnight Madness, or Embraceable, what sort of perfume would have the best effect as far as you're concerned?
You better give me a pint of hands off.
Fashion comes to its full glory in Ascot Week, among the impeccably dressed women, stroll men of distinction who lift their grey toppers with an admiring murmur of...
Oh, maybe. I must get this tipper off. It's left a red ring round my forehead. If you're feeling peckish, I've got the sandwiches in my binocular case. Perhaps the Aga Khan would care to swap a filchet for one of his saveloys. So spill lemon all down my waistcoat. Now I lose my deposit. Oh, maybe the gambling fever has got me in its clutches again. Could you slip me another sixpence till Friday? I'll wager it with an honest-looking bookkeeper. Here, while I'm gone, sit on my shooting stick. Oh, Mavis, silly girl, the other way up.
Recently, the National Federation of Merchant Tailors hit on a new idea of fashion display. Instead of merely having a mannequin parade of their creations, they presented a short play in which all the characters showed off the latest fashions.
Pipes suggests that this idea could be adapted to radio. Couldn't the BBC also combine fashion notes and drama? Dick Barton, well-dressed agent.
So, Sir Otto, you show yourself in your true colors.
Chocolate brown trousers and light form sports coat, informal yet dressed.
Be careful, Dick. He's given you the slip once before.
That thrilling rayon taffeta slip cut on the bias and flounced with eyelet embroidery.
All right, Barton, you've called my bluff. I throw up my hands. Notice my cuffs are still showing. 1 inch below the sleeve. That's the rule.
You've won, Dick. I knew his bluff had no foundation.
But I have. It's the new comfy foam roll-on with the tea rose batiste front panel.
It's the last trick, Sir Otto. At last, you're going to feel that rope around your neck.
Instead of that silly stiff, woolly boned cutaway collar with a polo point.
They're going to tie that rope round my neck, Bottom. Grant me one last request.
What's that?
Make it a Windsor knot.
John Chapman was a man who planted apple trees to help the country grow up big and strong. An angel, so they say, pointed out the way, singing this funny apple song. There's apples pickled, those so tasty, apples hard and apples tasty, apple dumpling, not to mention apple sap. Apple fritter, a light of thistle, and for folks to wet their whistles, tangy apple cider in a glass. Stew 'em, fry 'em, boil 'em, bake 'em, apple puff and apple cake 'em. You can cook an apple anyway. There's apple this and apple that, the recipe that fill your hat. I could carry on like this all day. So pack your stuff and get a goin', get them apple trees a-growin'. There's a lot of work out there to do. Oh, there's a lot of work for you.
He set to work and soon had lots of apple trees. You'd hear him singing as he went along. I'm Johnny Appleseed, and I'm doing my good deed, planting my apples with a song. There's apple pickles, oh, so tasty apples, hard and apple, pasty apple dumpling, not to mention apple slabs. Apple fritter, a light of thistle, and for folks to whistle, a whistle, tangy apple cider in a glass. Now you've got all the seeds you're needing. In your spare time, do some reading. There ain't nothing finer than a book. Oh, here's a mighty handy bonnet. Even got a handle on it. Turn it upside down and you can cook. So come on there and get a go and get them apple trees a-growing. There's a lot of work out there to do. Oh, there's a lot of work for you. Oh, there's a lot of work for you.
Thank you, Miss Nichols. That was the apple song. Did I hear cries of caw, caw? Well, greetings, gentlefolk. So we come to my program notes. Now, this week's film deals with Russia, so my views on the subject should be worth nothing. I beg your pardon, that should be worth noting. Recently, Bentley and I made a perilous journey across the Russian steppes in a bobsleigh. Well, we couldn't afford a two-bob one. That was just a little joke. Practically impossible to get a littler one. Well, Bentley harnessed the dogs to the sleigh and then complained that whenever he shouted tally-ho, they just laughed in his face. I pointed out that the more usual word was mush. So he said, very well, then they laughed in my mush. We drove the sled for 80 miles across the snow with the dogs barking excitedly. And then we changed places and they pulled up. Going through the Carpathians, disaster struck. We were attacked by wolves. Tearing down from the woods came a huge pack. I counted them. 6, 8, 10, Jack, Queen. Hastily we checked our ammunition. Bentley had 45 rounds of soft-nosed bullets. I had 63 rounds. How we wished we had brought a gun. The wolves came nearer. I realized that I was face to face with mankind's oldest curd. Turning to him, I said, Bentley, I said, Bentley, they're out for blood. One of us has got to be sacrificed. You. Him, you see. He went pale. He went pale. With his white face and brown fur coat, he looked like a partly used pipe cleaner. I had my money on the other gag. Well, never mind. He lay down on the snow. The wolves came up to him, lusting for blood. They leapt at him, then turned away, sickeningly disappointed. So at last, we come to our Russian overture, played by Rimsky-Kantel and his commissars. They will play Boris Godunov's favorite composition on the theory that if it's good enough for Boris, then it's good enough for you. So overture, peasants, please.
Following in the great classical tradition of Anna Karenina, the Queen of Spades, the battleship Potemkin, and Christmas with the Huggit, Tice brings to your screen today a massive story of medieval Russia, the story of Catherine the Great. Listen to the comments of a typical vulgar boatman.
Eat up, my Persian skipper, I'll cost you one.
In the lead, we have lovely Joy Nichols, who only just failed to be elected Miss Malted Hops of 1949. She came second and was elected Miss Bungstopper. She plays Catherine, the tragic, tempestuous queen.
Though I am a queen in a big palace, I am also a woman. I want little ones. And you can't get little palaces these days, can you? I just sit here all day playing Russian rummy.
What is Russian rummy, Your Majesty?
The same as English, only you don't lay all your cards on the table.
After 4 weeks shooting, our film was behind schedule, so we had to put a jerk in it. Yes, it's Richard Bentley. Who was unearthed in the great success Gravediggers of 1908. He plays Boris Bensky, the peasant who fought against tyranny.
Oh, I'm just a poor peasant pottering past Petrograd. No money at all, what we call in Russia, ruble to ruble. All my family were poor. We couldn't even afford a bar of soap. Every September, my little mother would gather us children and varnish us for the winter.
Opposite him, we have Professor Jimmy Edwards, who joined the Russian Ballet Company to dance Le Lac de Cygne. As Nijinsky remarked afterwards,
I'd like the senior.
Today, the professor portrays the evil genius of the Russian court, Rasputris.
Yes, I speak Russian like a native. Listen, Dromotsky, Posnavich, Tavarich, Gromyko, Chekhov, Oblensky, Mihailovich, Nidnoskorod.
What does that mean, Highness?
My grandmother has dropped her pogo stick in the mashed potato.
Surely that's an unusual sentence.
Not in Russia.
So to our picture, the only film ever made which starts in the middle. This is specially for the benefit of people who always come in the middle. Ladies and gentlemen, we present The Way to the Tsar, or Strictly Off the Russian. The scene is the Palace of Unterglas. Catherine the Great is in the icy cold throne room discussing affairs of state with Rasputris.
The long bleak Russian night is closing in. Drop the curtain, Rasputris.
Right.
It's so hard to get a helmet to fit these iron curtains. The night is cold and my soul is weary.
I will warm the place. Varlet, throw another peasant on the fire. Little mother of all the Russians, we must have more money.
Oh, Rasputris, don't tax my poor subject anymore. All I have left to eat is salami sausages. Their food has gone from bad to worse.
But look at the palace revenue for the year. 5 million from taxation, 18 million from subsidies, 23 million from exports, a tanner from the car park. I should never have taken that penny off the vodka.
But what about the nation's coffers?
Oh, I didn't touch cigarettes. We'll have to send more men to the salt mines in Siberia.
Oh, no, no, I cannot permit it. Already there are thousands of young men up there, herded together in a vast camp with orders shouted at them all day. Who gave you the idea for that?
A fellow called Baklin. The order is here, little Tsarina. Sign, please.
Oh, it is infamous. I am queen. Have I no sway at all?
Only when you walk. Sign.
Wait, Your Majesty. There is a peasant outside who desires an audience.
Well, we've got quite a good one here tonight. Have him come in.
Your Majesty, I must see you.
Gad, a shmoo.
No, I am a simple moujik by the name of Boris. I've run away from a place in Siberia called Ninotchka, Gromyvich, Vladivostok, and Tom.
What did Boris say, Winnie?
You ran away? Didn't your master stop you?
No, the old moujik master simply sat there amazed. Ah, Your Majesty, I come to ask you, stop this cruel oppression. Men must have their fundamental rights. Men want life, liberty, and the pursuit of something or other.
What about women?
That's it. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of women. Want to be quick.
Enough! What an unpleasant peasant. This is rank mutiny. Rank mutiny like they had at Denham the other week. Captain of the guard, have this man shot.
Oh, no, not more bloodshed. Spare him. He's young, eager, ambitious. Not only that, he is handsome, charming.
Very well, then.
Don't interrupt. You hadn't finished what you were saying.
I'll spare him, but only for a short time. Peasant, you can have 3 days of grace. I'll arrange it forthwith.
Oh, grace?
Grace is.
Boris was tossed into a dark dungeon where Rasputin tortured him with fiendish ingenuity.
Twist it again.
No, no.
And again, another twist.
No, I can't stand it.
Just one more twist. Now let's see. Oh, bother, 22, I'm back.
But whatever they tried on him, Boris didn't flinch. He didn't bat an eyelid. He just fainted. I realized that here at last was the man who could pull my chestnut out of the fire and use them in future programs. One night I was sitting in my boudoir with a flimsy droshky wrapped round my shoulders when I heard a tap at the window. Turning off the tap, I opened the window and Boris staggered in.
I've escaped. They're after me. Can I stay in your boudoir for a couple of years?
Oh, no. No, no, you must not.
Oh, but it's raining outside. The drops are as big as my head.
Well, if it's just a drizzle, you can go.
No, no, please help me, Lolita. You know Spain so well, Lolita.
The name is Catherine.
Oh, sorry, I was thinking of last week. Catherine. Catherine, that's a lovely name. It's the most beautiful name I ever heard. Why wasn't I called Catherine?
It must have been a near thing. But you are the man to help me to overthrow Rasputin.
Yes, whatever I may be, I'm not a coward. It just so happens I'm afraid of everything.
Then let's escape from the palace together. Switch the lights out. Open this door. Oh, it's locked. We're trapped in the dark. What can we do? Oh, I wish I was a man.
No, in the dark. It's better as things are.
Wait, I have an idea. There's a secret passage here somewhere. Let me feel along the wall. Just here, there's an opening. There's a current of warm air coming through.
Take your hand out of my mouth. Put the lights up.
Rasputin.
Rasputin, I am your queen. I command you, put that revolver away. I am Catherine. They call me the Great.
Well, push your damper in. I'm boss now. Peasant, you've dared to cross me, so you and I will play the game they call Russian roulette. In this revolver, I place one cartridge. Oh. Now I spin the barrel. Oh. You place it against your forehead and press the trigger.
Oh, no, no.
Don't worry, Catherine. I counted the chambers as they spun round.
Oh.
It's only a question of counting up to seven. I'll press the trigger.
Oh. I'm pretty backward, aren't I?
Oh, Boris. Boris, don't leave me all alone.
I won't leave you, Cass. I'll be here. I promise you I'll be here.
Oh, good.
Only I'll be dead.
You were a worthy foe, Boris Finsky. Can you leave a last message to inspire our nation in the future?
I...
Oh, try, Boris. Haven't you any last word that you can bequeath to Russia?
I... No.
That's the word.
Chantel and the Augmented Review Orchestra bring our recorded show to a close. Those involved were Joy Nichols, Dick Bentley, and Professor Jimmy Edwards, encouraged by Wallace Eaton, Alan Dean, and the keynote. Frank Muir and Dennis Norden sewed up the script, and Charles Maxwell gave them the needle. Joy, Dick, and Jimmy invite you to tune in next week and...